Hello and welcome once again to Learning Digital Photography. I'm your host Jason Anderson and you're listening to episode number 30. On this week's show we've got some photo news, we've got the latest contest news, we've got a winner from August, we've got the current contest underway for September, and the announcements for the October contest as well. Also coming up on this week's show, got an exciting way to feature you, the listener, in the Canon Blogger newsletter that's going to be coming out starting in October of this year. All that coming up right after this, so don't go away. Back to Learning Digital Photography. In photo news this week, there were a couple of key announcements that happened pretty recently. The first one coming from the folks over at Apple in one of their press release announcements today. They talked about the new iPods that were coming out. Of course, everything dropped in price, but a couple things of notes, particularly to photographers, is the new iPod Nano that they came out with. There's a lot of really cool new features added to this, including the FM radio with live pause, so you can actually listen to live radio and pause it as well. You get voiceover, where you can actually get voice recognition built into your iPod, and you can sort your albums and music on that level. But the really cool thing about the iPods is that the iPod Nano also is going to have a built-in video camera, so you can actually record video in something pretty small. And from what I understand, this is going to produce some really nice quality images. This obviously isn't going to be high def, but the ability still to record video on something this small is definitely going to aid in the movement towards digital convergence between still and videos. On the other side of the spectrum, the iPod Touch also now has the ability to import photos straight from iPhoto on a Mac, but you can also import photos from Photoshop Elements and from the Creative Suite as well. So that's just another way that we can be sharing our photos with one another. It's pretty much going to be across the board from where I was reading about it with regard to Mac and PC platforms, that the iPod will be able to recognize both. So no matter which platform you're using, you can now export photos from whatever your preferred photo application is straight to your iPod to share with others as you are on the go. And it's just another utility that is now at our disposal. And with the popularity of iPods, this is only going to increase our interest in sharing multimedia with one another, whether it's video, still, or even audio. So that's some kind of cool news from the iPod and Apple front. In other cool news, Leica made an announcement just actually earlier today about two new cameras it released, the first of which is the M9. This is an 18-megapixel full-frame sensor digital rangefinder camera. This starts at about $7,000, and it's actually, it's a shade under that. It's like $69.95. But the exciting thing about this isn't so much that it's a rangefinder camera or the full-frame sensor. Its low megapixel count relative to its sensor size means that it's actually got individual pixel sizes of 6.8 microns, which means these pixels are actually really large, or much larger than the average size pixel. And what that basically means is the low light performance on this camera is supposedly going to be phenomenal. Its ISO range goes from 100 to 2500 with a special pull 80 setting for optimal picture quality and bright light. I'm not sure what all that means, but the cool part of this is that the M9 doesn't use any kind of anti-aliasing or blur filters to increase sharpness through any kind of offset. So you might get a chance, there might be a chance for greater noise. But Leica has put in a new processor and firmware with this to improve the algorithms for making that high top-end line that is already prevalent in its S2 series, I think it is. It's an S2, which is the larger cousin. It goes for like $20,000, so a little out of most people's price leagues, but it's bringing that technology into this lower grade of camera, and when I say lower, of course, it's a relative, into the SLR and the digital rangefinder price range, which is more reachable for many of us. It's only going to be a matter of time then when you start to see this technology go down to the digital SLRs in vendors like Canon and Nikon. So full frame sensors and megapixels that also have larger pixel sizes, which means better low light performance and new algorithms to alter the processing of digital noise in your photos is just, you know, it's just another indication of how much things are escalating in the photography field. People are no longer looking at just the megapixels. They're also looking at low light performance as well as increasing algorithms to adjust and compensate for noise. So it's really an exciting time because it seems like a lot of the vendors are starting to understand that it's not just about megapixels. It's also about the image quality with regard to low light performance, with regard to ISO handling, things of that nature. And the M9 does seem to be the first step in that direction, because a full frame sensor with that low a megapixel count does mean that it will handle pretty phenomenally in low light situations. The smaller cousin of this that Leica released was the, I think it was the X1 or something like that. It was it's a 12 megapixel, it's a compact camera. And it's got a 12 megapixel count. It's got a fixed 24 millimeter lens on there that I think goes down to f2 or 2.8, one of those two. That's going to actually be retailing for somewhere around $2,000, I think it was, probably later in December. So it's probably going to be geared for release right before the holidays for those people that are interested in getting a Leica quality product in time for the holidays. So that's something to be looking out for as well. So that's the photo news beat for this episode of Learning Digital Photography. Coming back right after the break, this is going to be a short episode this week. I'm going to share with you some contest news. We have the winner from the August contest. I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about the September contest, what all's involved with that, what the prizes are, where to go to enter, and what kind of things you can be thinking of hopefully doing to get your images in. And what's also coming up in a future contest. We've got a couple other sponsors coming on board that are pretty exciting. And after all that, the Canon Blogger newsletter. I'm going to tell you some of the more details of what's going to be going into these monthly newsletters as they come out, hopefully starting in October. So you're going to want to stick around and catch up on all that stuff right after the break. Welcome back. In our middle segment here, I'm going to be talking to you about some contest news. The August giveaway has been wrapped up and the winner announced. The winner for the August giveaway took away a Wacom Bamboo Fun. I'd like to thank everyone that participated in the August giveaway for actually participating. I had a lot of really cool images. It was tough coming up with the finalists as well as the winner. But the winner was posted on the blog earlier this week. So if you're interested in seeing who the winner was and checking out their full Flickr photo stream, make sure you stop over to the blog, canonblogger.com, and you can see the winning image as well as links to their Flickr photo streams. The second piece of contest news is, of course, about the current contest that's underway for September. The winner of this giveaway is going to take home a ThinkTank multimedia photo bag system designed to carry all your multimedia needs with you while you're on the go. Very cool bag system, valued total retail of $350. You'll be taking home that in conjunction with the Topaz Labs plugin bundle for Adobe Photoshop. That's valued at $150 and has a lot of really cool features. The Topaz Adjust, the Topaz DJPEG, Topaz Noise, removal, just some really cool plugins here. I did a review of a portion of their entire software bundle here back on the blog. I looked at two of them already. So if you haven't looked at those, you'll want to stop in and check those out. They've got some good information there with as well some screenshots of how these things process. All combined, though, this is a total retail package of $500 worth in the September giveaway. Because it's ThinkTank and Topaz Labs, the theme then is going to be thinking in color. So thinking for ThinkTank and color for Topaz Labs. So make sure your photo is thinking in color themed and share that over on the Flickr thread that is set up there for the September giveaway. You're also going to want to make sure, I'll say this one more time on a podcast, moving forward from here, one of the consistent requirements that will happen for all the Flickr threads is that your longest side of your image, so if you look at your image, it doesn't matter what the aspect ratio is, doesn't matter how big or small it is, as long as that longest side is somewhere between 600 and 800 pixels in length or width. If it's smaller than that or larger than that, just on the one side, then it will be disqualified. I really can't accommodate images much smaller or larger on the blog when we do the galleries without getting some serious distortions. So that is one of the requirements for participating in the giveaways. Had a couple images that unfortunately just didn't make the final cut because they did not meet this criteria. And I know it seems kind of arbitrary, but like I said, it just makes for easier working in terms of incorporating photo galleries onto the blog site. So you want to make sure your photos are at least looking at the photo guidelines for each month, but that guideline will stay consistent from this point forward. So make sure your images are 600 to 800 pixels on the longest side. The exciting news for the contest side of things is that we have a couple new sponsors. So for the October giveaway, the winner is going to walk away with a copy of Noizeware's Noise Ninja. This is a plugin and a software program that helps you reduce noise in your images. So if you're shooting at high ISO levels, Noise Ninja will actually help you get rid of noise in your photos and give them the smooth, clean look that you're looking for. And the other portion of the giveaway is also going to come from the folks over at HDR Software, or HDR Soft. They produce the popular Photomatix software, which allows you to stack and tone map multiple images with different exposures to produce HDR or high dynamic range images. So thanks to the folks over at Noizeware and HDR Soft for their contributions. We're going to see what may come from this as far as promotional discounts for people going to the site from the blog after the contest is over. We may be able to get some kind of discount for listeners and readers. That is still in the works, though, so I'm not sure what's coming up with that. But that's pretty exciting news with regard to contest giveaways. You're going to get a copy of Noizeware's Noise Ninja and HDR Soft's Photomatix software for HDR photography. Two pretty exciting things there. Both of those will be given away in the October contest, and a theme for that has not yet been announced, so you're going to want to stay tuned to the blog and the podcast shows for upcoming news and information on that. Coming back after the break, the final little tidbit is going to be the Canon Blogger newsletter. Some of the stuff that I'm putting into the monthly newsletter that's going to come out in October. And I'd like to actually hear from you, the readers, because I'm going to be featuring someone every month. And if you're interested in being featured, well, stop back after the break and you'll figure out how you can appear in the Canon Blogger newsletter. Don't go away. I'll be back right after this. Digital photography. In our final feature segment this week, I'm going to be talking to you about the Canon Blogger newsletter. I'm currently putting together material for a monthly newsletter to come from the blog. This has been something that's hopefully going to be well received. It's been requested by a couple people already. A couple features that I'm going to be including are the best of the month. I'm going to be picking four or five different posts from the previous month of content and material on the blog, and I'll be featuring that in this newsletter. Also in the newsletter, I'm going to be looking at the a tip of the month, so a little photo tip to help you improve your photography. There will also be a photo of the month, so you'll see some of my own work that I've been doing over the last month or so, and featuring that in the newsletter as well. And then last but not least, I'm also going to be incorporating a segment I'm going to call In the Spotlight. This is where I'll be picking an artist gallery from the Canon Blogger reading and the Learning Digital Photography listening audience, and I'll be featuring that person and their work over in the newsletter. So it's going to have some popular visibility access there for those of you that are listening to and enjoying the podcast. So if you're interested in being featured in the spotlight over here at Learning Digital Photography and on Canon Blogger, please feel free to email me. The address, as always, is jason@canonblogger.com. Stay tuned right after the break, and we'll do the listener questions and answers to round out this week's show. I'll be back right after this. This week's show for Learning Digital Photography are the listener questions and answers. Our first question comes to us from Chris in Tacoma, Washington. Chris writes in to ask for a little bit of clarification on what the whole idea of parallax refers to. This is kind of a technical term, but basically when you're thinking of parallax, basically what that's talking about is the angle of view on your subject matter. So if you are looking at a subject through your viewfinder, it may be slight, but you're still looking at it from a slightly different angle from that of where the sensor is. And parallax refers to that difference in angle between the viewfinder angle and the sensor angle. You see it a lot more. It's a lot more common in twin lens reflex cameras and rangefinder cameras because the angle is greater. The SLR cameras don't really have it to the same degree that rangefinder cameras and twin lens reflex cameras have it, because they actually use the same lens through which the photo is taken, because that mirror moves. So you won't get as much parallax error, which is what it's called, or you won't get really any parallax error in SLR cameras. So if you're shooting with an SLR, parallax isn't something you really need to worry about. Parallax is something that is more of an issue for people with twin lens reflex cameras, where there's two lenses, one lens that's used for the viewfinder and one that's used for the sensor, as well as viewfinders like rangefinder cameras, things of that nature. This is pretty much straightforward and right off the Wikipedia website, so I'll go ahead and throw a link to that into the show notes as well, because that's basically where I'm reading it from. So thanks to Chris, actually, for sending that question in. Moving out right along then, our second question comes to us from Sharon in Tallahassee. Sharon basically writes in asking what the difference between RGB and CMYK color is. This could be an entire podcast, Sharon. It could be pretty in-depth. I'll give you kind of a simplistic answer on it, and if anyone would like to chime in over on the blog with some of their thoughts as well, I would encourage you to do so. But basically, the difference between those two color spaces is that one is an additive color space and one is subtractive. And what that means is you add colors to a black or a dark background, so your colors are going to be darker, and they'll go across one particular range of colors, and the other is more subtractive, where colors are being taken away from a white background. And if you think about this in terms of color, black means the absence of color, or black is often referred to as the absence of color. There's no light, no wavelengths or anything when you're looking at black, whereas if you're looking at white, you're looking at all the colors. So all the wavelengths of light are actually getting to you. So subtractive color means you're taking away to reveal just that one wavelength, which would be the CMYK color space, whereas with the RGB color space, it's the additive, so you're adding a particular wavelength to a black or otherwise lack of light that's hitting your sensor, hitting your film, or whichever method you tend to be using. So if that helps, I know it can be a little bit confusing when you start hearing about additive colors and subtractive colors and things of that nature, but that basically is what the fundamental difference is between the RGB and CMYK color spaces. I am not a color expert though, so I really probably couldn't give a complete answer to you. I'm sure there are probably some other people out there that know more about the variances in color spaces more than I do. So if you happen to know something about RGB and CMYK color spaces, I would encourage you to share your thoughts, comments, and experiences over on the comment section of the blog at canonblogger.com. So that is the question from Sharon. Thank you to her for writing in as well. Our last question comes to us from Ellen in Toronto, Canada. Ellen writes in to basically inquire about what the status is of the Star Tracker device that I built a couple weeks ago and shared here on the blog. Ellen, thank you for stopping in to ask about it. And just to give everyone kind of an update, it's usable right now in its current status. I actually am planning on making some upgrades to it, though, because I've learned through additional research that it does have limitations. If you do an exposure over 10 minutes, you can actually start to get some movement in your star trails because it's a straight up and down and it won't curve to the same degree that the Earth does. So you will get star trails using this basic method that I've already illustrated if you don't account more for the curvature of the Earth and the rotation of stars as they track across the nighttime sky. So I'm going to be making some modifications and using a bolt that's got a bend to it to raise the one arm on the star tractor to keep things consistent. The other interesting thing to note for the star tracker device is that when I first assembled it, I did not take into account that the bulb mode for Canon SLR cameras only lets you go to 30 seconds before it requires you to hold the shutter down. So when you go into bulb mode, you can set it for 30 seconds and it will auto open and close the shutter for long exposure photography. But once you get past that mark, you're going to have to actually hold that shutter down yourself. And one of the best ways to do that, which I didn't have, was a remote cabled shutter release that plugs into the camera and you can move up to like 10 feet away or something like that. So that is the question, the last question for this week's show. If anyone does have questions they would like to see addressed here at Learning Digital Photography, please feel free to email me. The address, as always, is jason@canonblogger.com. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Have a great week, and we'll see you hopefully next week with another episode of Learning Digital Photography. Have a good weekend, everyone. Bye.